Gemma, so each specie has its operating system or windows, if you like. And that's its law of being. What is called in India is dharma. Dharma is not about rituals or religion. It's each specie has its own way of being, law of being. It's perfectly valid for that. It's valid for the tiger to kill and devour for hunger. That's its law of being. But if human being does it, it contradicts his law of being. So as humans, our law of being is basically reason. Reason is our operating system, if you want to put it. And reason operates through the dual tables of right and wrong, virtue and vice, when it has to make a decision. Of course, there are practical considerations and all other things. But truly a human being, he doesn't go just by the instinct and the impulse of an animal. That's what makes him human. So he steps back, he thinks, he deliberates, and he always believes in our operating system, it's inbuilt that we have a free choice. So whether there is a free choice or not is not the issue. It's just that we are given the sense that we have a free choice. So we have no other choice but to exercise our free choice, which may or may not be there. So we believe that we are the doers and we have to choose, and we choose basically between high human type. I'm not saying a humanity which is like an animal. That's a different humanity which is driven by every impulse. So obviously that's a namesake humanity. It's still evolving. Its body is human, but as Bhartahari, the great sage and mystic, said, that there are animals who don't have horns, don't have tails, and walk on toes. So that's a different kind of humanity. But being human means that we exercise reason, that we try to deliberate, because we are the doer, we make choices, and also therefore the law of karma, that we get the consequences. But is this the highest truth? All mystics say this is not. Mother and Sri Aurobindo bring it in very, very clear, bold relief, that there is a higher operating system than human, and it increases as we go up the ladder, and the divine, it's a completely different operating system. That's why human beings cannot understand why divine does what he does, why he works the way he works. So there are people who even say that Krishna has to go to hell because he actually instigated the, or was in some way, weird way, responsible for the war. They even blame the divine for everything that is possible. They believe that divine justice means the way we conceive right and wrong and justice. But the divine works very differently. He is beyond good and evil to start with. And if man has to move towards divine life, he has to gradually transfer the sense of doership to the divine. He has to learn this. And when he transfers it, he also cannot then after that take credit. We are quick to leave the blame part, but we are very ready to take the credit. Then credit or whatever we want to, he is the doer, so he does. Now it's a very difficult thing for human consciousness. We can try to cheat, deceive, God is doing everything, but it's not true, because in everything we make a choice. So as long as we make a choice, we can't transfer this. Later on, the choice begins to emerge in man, but by a different modus operandi. It is no more based on all our human worldly considerations. So that's the supramental standpoint which we have been reading, that something which transcends the human, just as human transcends the animal. So controlling the animal vital by the moral and rational sense is human. Controlling the reason and morality, going beyond it, transcending it, by something still higher, by an intuition, if you want to call it, that's the superhuman. So this is the difference, very difficult to comprehend unless one starts living in that state of consciousness. And therefore, we are reading these aphorisms to help us gradually shift, at least in our thinking, toward that state. So Shri Krishna says this. He says, Trigunatit bhava sabhisachi. He says that you know, you have to rise beyond the guna, beyond the sense of guna. Satugun tells you about right, wrong, virtue, vice. But before that, sometimes people ask, Today we don't have that person. Oh, when people are laughing in the class, it's a disturbance, and you know, they like a very serious kind of a what shall I say, talk. Sometimes they don't know something which Sri Aurobindo has said very beautifully. All mystics have said this, and if you look at their life, Buddha, the way he would laugh, Sri Aurobindo, his laughter, his humor. So this, our idea that divine beings are very stiff, serious, is because human beings carry the burden, no? They carry the burden of fate, they carry the burden of future, they carry the burden of the past, they are ridden with guilt, they are ridden with worries. So we are always serious. But to become divine is to become free. And the more you become free, the more you are filled with delight. So sometimes this delight can express in a very beautiful ways. And the mother says, Sri Aurobindo's aphorism, God's laughter is sometimes very coarse and unfit for polite ears. He is not satisfied with being Moliere. He must needs also be Aristophanes and Rabelais. These are all, you know, characters which, you know, philosophers in the Western world. And then something even more beautiful. If men took life, hold the breath, if men took life less seriously, they could very soon make it more perfect. Why is it so? Because we take life seriously because we think this is how it should be perfect. But we don't understand that life is not just my way of looking at life and making it perfect. It's a totality, and everything has its own beautiful stage. God never takes his work seriously. Therefore, one looks out on this wonderful universe. So he just like sprays colors, and you see flowers coming up out of the mud. If man saw the mud, he will say, oh my God, this is so horrible. But God says, okay, I'll make the mud climb in a rose. Make the mud bloom like an orchid. I have plants, it can transmute into lotus. So he takes up anything and turns it into something beautiful, because he doesn't, by seriously here it means this. It's not like, not seriously means casually have fun. No, he's not saying that. So perfection is a goal. But perfection is not the way we think, that everything should be according to my idea, my views, and then we create a mess in life. And then the third one. Shame has admirable results, and both in aesthetics and in morality we could ill spare it. But for all that, it is a badge of weakness and the proof of ignorance. That's why we see some of these sannyasis. There's a famous story of Telangana Swami. He used to go without clothes, and people didn't understand. Even Sri Ramakrishna, barely he would wear anything. I mean, during many of his, though his pictures we see the dhoti, but they are freed from all these. Shame is regarded as one of the asht bandhan, one of the eight bondages. It doesn't mean they are shameless people. We should not, you know, human mind puts binaries. We cannot think other than binaries. You are above. Why it is a badge of weakness? When do we have shame? Because we have the sense of sin, guilt, wrongdoing. Therefore, there is shame. But somebody in whom there is no such vibration will be above it, will not feel that way. Neither for himself nor for anyone. He looks at life in a very different way. So, the question is, mother is asked, one might ask how taking things seriously has prevented life from being more perfect. I remember once Professor Indrasen had come to Pune and he was giving a small gathering, and he was saying Parkinson's in a, you know, somebody would, but he was, he had come to pick up an award, Indian Science Congress award. So somebody asked him that if one has to do sadhana, shouldn't one be serious? He said, why? Sadhana makes you happy and full of delight. Why should? He said, no, but if you do serious sadhana. So he said, if you do serious sadhana, you will be more filled with delight. So serious sadhana is not about a glum face, a gloomy face, a serious face. That apart, that behind serious face, a lot of mischief may be lying. So this is because the delight of the divine is delight, raso vaisaha. So, but human beings find it very difficult to understand. So she is being asked that, how can we make life more perfect that way? And now mother reveals something very interesting. Virtue has always spent its time eliminating whatever it found bad in life. And if all the virtues of the various countries of the world had been put together, very few things would remain in existence. Because life is in movement, it's evolving. So imagine when you see thorns coming out in a prospective rose plant, virtue will eliminate it. If it sees that there is pain, it will eliminate. So it will ultimately caterpillar cutting off the pain, virtue. Because the cocoon is stifling the caterpillar, so cut it. But when you cut it, you have also prevented the scope of flying. So we don't understand the ways of the divine, why there is pain. There is a reason behind it. Virtue wants to eliminate and ends up eliminating itself, because my virtue may be somebody else's vice. And so if all the virtuous people came together and wanted to eliminate, they would end up eliminating each other. Then she says, virtue claims to seek perfection, but perfection is a totality. So the two movements contradict each other. A virtue that eliminates, reduces, fixes limits, and a perfection that accepts everything, rejects nothing, but puts each thing in its place, obviously cannot agree. So perfection is a totality. And I remember a scene from a very old movie, I think its name was Utsav. So the thief has, it starts with a thief who is entering a house. So when he comes out of the house, so they are in a hurry to run because they have broken through the wall. And the main thief, there also the other thief is a trainee. So the main thief says, no, 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 we can't leave it like this. He says, what do you mean you can't leave? We have to run. He says, no, I can't do a slipshod work. He says, slipshod means I have broken the wall. I must make it good. It must look good. The person should say, yes, somebody who has done this theft is, after all, a master in the art. So, you know, now it's like how perfection shapes itself even in what is apparently evil. So through everything, see how human beings learn, even in that process. They calculate, they plan, they execute. Now, of course, it's evil without a doubt, and it will go. But there is even in that something, which is something. That's why we enjoy those stories where you see someone has very well planned and executed something. It's like amazing. What makes you really feel joy in it? It's precisely that aspect of the human being, Arthur Conan Doyle's stories, and how he is able to reach the conclusions. So she says, taking life seriously generally consists of two movements. So there is a thing, if you put it in the right place, it'll be wonderful. Like Sri Krishna tells when everybody has to, Rajasu Yagya, so everybody has to do their role. So people, Yudhishthira asks, where do I put this fellow, Duryodhan? He says, put him on the coffers where he has to give dana. He says, why? He says, because he hates you. So he'll give generously. Let his coffers be empty. So you see, it's when you put there a man who has a quality. He was also a veer, by the way. But if he could put these things in the right place. So taking life seriously generally consists of two movements. And this is wonderful. The first one is to give importance to things that probably have none. So that's how it was. In a monastery, there were rules, six rules. But they were told the most important rule is rule number one. So whenever people would have a fight or quarrel, one of them will say, rule number one, and everybody will become quiet. And you know, they would even laugh and smile at each other. So one day somebody observes, says, what is this rule number one? After which all other. So he says, rule number one is that there is no rule. Then there are rules. You follow rule, but remember that there is no rule. Now it is a way of communicating. It doesn't mean that we lead a lawless life, but it shows that actually in life we put so many trappings and then which probably have none. And the second is to want life to be reduced to a certain number of qualities that are considered pure and worthy of existence. That's our operating system, highest human. But if you judge God by this operating system, that's why we say, oh, this world is so horrible. God must be horrible. What is he doing? He's not making things the way I expect them to be. I want them to be. Isn't it? That is exactly why we cannot understand God. But he is shaping them very patiently. So, all these qualities. In some people, for example, those Shurvindo speaks about here, the polite or the Puritans, this virtue becomes dry, arid, grey, aggressive. So what happens with people who try to be very virtuous? They become, as we read in the previous aphorism, that sin was a mechanism devised by nature so that we can become aware of our own fault lines. But even that, we have become smart enough to use this sense of sin to condemn others and be keenly aware of others but not our own. So that's where he says that this virtue becomes dry, arid, grey, aggressive, and it finds faults everywhere, in everything that is joyful and free and happy. So it's almost like hasna mana hai. So you see, there are typical one of our religions, what shall I say, religion or whatever. You're not supposed to be happy, you're not supposed to play music, no dance, you're not supposed to dress up well. Everything that makes you happy is banned. And everything that is banned is done behind the parda and the burqa. I mean, it's done. It's just that you put up. Because you are, and you become so dry, aggressive, literally aggressive. It goes to a point where you will cut off somebody who doesn't agree with you. See, this is the problem. Virtue is a living example of what has happened. But God transcends it. So when we do lead life like this, whereas when you see our Krishna, you just can't figure out what is it. He is happy, he is mischievous, he is smiling, but he is jnani. When he starts the Gita, it's something amazing. When he loves, he is unparalleled. When he is to fight a war, he makes sure that the victory has to be won because it's dharma. So if you try to judge him on the yardsticks of virtue, one will always find something missing. But Sri Krishna laughing and happily, he's making life perfect. See, the same thing with Mother and Sri Aurobindo, dealing with so many different varieties of nature. Some two sadhaks fought, well-known sadhaks. And somebody went and complained to Sri Aurobindo that, oh, they were getting angry at each other and fighting. Sri Aurobindo says, oh, when fire meets fire and it's midsummer now, so what else do you expect except some explosion? That's all. He didn't give them a lecture. You know, it's very bad. I'm supposed to be angry, especially, you know. He, when somebody asked him, how do you look at human beings? He says, well, like human beings look at cats and dogs when they're fighting. So what do you say? He says, you say ki cats and dogs wo aise hi karte hain. And then you take them along the journey. You're not expecting them to be otherwise. So, the only way to make life perfect, I mean here, life on earth, is to look at it from high enough to see it as a whole. So you have to see how the whole journey, like a child. Some people become very serious with a child, trying to, you know, make him what somebody is at the age of 40 and 50. And sometimes when they come to me and say, this bacha ye karta hai, wo karta hai. So I ask them, you never did what? So, but I don't ask in front of the child because they'll be embarrassing. It's, you grow through all this. And when you understand, then you have to pick up the key. Not get into these, because children, it's known in psychology, when children who are too much at the age of 2, 3, 4, you're very naughty, don't do this, don't do this. They become so afraid. They lose confidence. It's a known thing. Psychologists say that allow them to go through experimentation. They'll go through it even in adolescence. But if you become too serious about everything, then you also cut off the possibility of growing. You expand your wings. You try to fly. You fall. It's like that. But if you say, no, you have fallen. You don't fly. You be in the cage. So what happens? You lose the possibility. So to see it in a totality, that this is how life grows and evolves. Therefore, she says, and then all these things that seem so bad, so reprehensible, so unacceptable to the Puritan mind would become movements of delight and freedom in a totally divine life. See, it's through this that the divine life is created. If you start restricting, then you will never, a person who has never fallen, never failed, Shubhendu says never fight under his banner because he doesn't understand human nature. So you will create a limited human perfection, which is not what divine wants to create. He wants us to grow in that freedom of delight. So he says, and then nothing would prevent us from knowing, understanding, feeling and living this wonderful laughter of the Supreme, who takes infinite delight in watching himself live infinitely. This delight, this wonderful laughter that dissolves every shadow, every pain, every suffering. You only have to go deep enough within yourself to find the inner sun, to let yourself be flooded by it. And then there is nothing but a cascade of harmonious, luminous, sunlit laughter which leaves no room for any shadow or pain. Just imagine the sun comes every day. And if one day he says, no, today the number of people who misused my light, I'm not going to come tomorrow. That's not how the sun does. He comes again. And again and again. Because he lives in that vastness, the totality. And that's how the divine does. He keeps pouring. If you look at mother's ways, what does the mother do? She doesn't keep saying good, bad, right, wrong. She just keeps pouring her love, light, peace. Till one day you get addicted to it. And you leave the lesser for the greater. Sri Ramakrishna, there is a story where Girish Babu is Ghosh. He was, of course, used to drink and do this. Now, this is not that you should lead that kind of life. It's just that we should go beyond it. So he came to Sri Ramakrishna. He was attracted, something in his heart. And he asked him, he said, I feel good about you, I like you. But you know, I can't do this yoga, all this. Why? What's the problem? He said, no, I can't do all this sadhana, yoga, meditation. He says, who is asking you to do all this? What I have to do? He said, nothing. You remember me. Whatever you are doing, remember me. He said, but that's all. He said, yes. So next time he went to drink with his friends, he remembered. I am offering it to his guru. He said, after 1 week, what have you told me to do? I can't do like this. I can't offer this to you. He says, why? This is how you want to lead your life. And then the change begins to come because you are bringing the consciousness in contact with the divine. Whereas the sense of virtue creates an artificial perfection. It never allows you to come in contact with that wonderful vastness of the divine consciousness. In fact, even the greatest difficulties, even the greatest sorrows, even the greatest physical pain, if you can look at them from that standpoint, from there, you see the unreality of the difficulty, the unreality of the sorrow. The unreality of the pain, and there is nothing but a joyful and luminous vibration. That's how, you know, so many times, like people have these, especially youngsters, they go to heartbreaks and then sometimes they write, same day, I have suffered from a heartbreak. I said, thank God, you know, better you are suffering it now than suffering for the rest of your life. Then suddenly the person laughs. Because one had never expected this answer. So it happened. I said, see, little suffering is better or you want a lifelong suffering? So they understand what I am saying. I said, see, right now your heart is broken, you are suffering, okay? After 2 days, you'll be. But if you were to, heart was not broken, if you were just together, there's nothing like a happily ever after, no? So you are going to, then you have no choice. So you'll be left with no choice. So right now, go through this little bit of pain. Take it that it's a growing up process. And it immediately puts a different thing. You have to shift the needle of consciousness. Mother says, if you shift it, in pain, we get stuck at that. And why? Because of all our ideas of what should be. But because the needle is stuck, we are suffering. If you just shift it a little, everything changes. So, in fact, this is the most powerful way of dissolving difficulties, overcoming sorrows and removing pain. The first two are relatively easy. The last one is more difficult. So what is the first two? Is like becoming wide and plastic, so look at life from very vast angle. That's how things become. And it's there in everyone. And she says, we have to learn, we have not learned to bring into it this luminous laughter that dissolves all darkness, all difficulty, all discord, all disharmony, everything that jars, that weeps and wails. Imagine, you know, people are fighting. So we take that very seriously, of course. Now, I have learned over years, and any sensible person, don't intervene too much in trying to solve the problem. Next day, they will be together and happy. And you are the one who is going to be... Recently, someone was sharing an example that some lady came and she was sharing her grievance about her daughter and this lady's brother. And she just, you know, when somebody is sharing all this pain, what do you say? Yeah, 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 it happens. He's like that. Casually, she told he's like that. Now this lady goes back and blows it up and tells her daughter, see, even her sister has said he's like that. Now this girl who was apparently fighting with the boy came and told, see, your sister said you are like this. And then this boy stopped talking to his sister. What a strange thing. He said, I have learned my lesson. I said, yes. Tomorrow they will patch up and be happy. But you will become the, you know, sore point. Both will avoid you. So better. Now this one, about one aspect. But most of the time, you see life, how it moves, evolves. If you look at it from a large perspective, even human consciousness, how it has evolved through so much and is still evolving, going towards a grand culmination. That's the beauty of Sri Aurobindo. Stay focused on where you are going. Imagine you know that you are going to meet Krishna around the corner. Will you be bothered about, oh, yesterday I had a fight, I am going to sit, let Krishna wait? You won't. That is the solution. So you will go further and further towards that. And this sun of divine laughter is at the center of all things, the truth of all things. We must learn to see it, to feel it, to live it. And she's going to say something, huh? Which will make her. But before that, the story of Krishna, since we mentioned that Narad, he tells him, Narad asks him, or before that also, there is another story. So many stories, but one of them is that Narad asks, Lord, I want to be very handsome, Vishnu Bhagavan. Okay, why? He says, you know, there is a swambar, I want to go there. And he goes there and he thinks that now Lord has sent me, who better suitor? And everybody is laughing at him because his majesty has made his face like a monkey. And then he comes back and he even curses. These monkeys will save you one day. Just wait and see. He said, why did you let me go? He said, just to see where all you can go, how far you can go, what all can you do. But you belong to me. I won't let you go just like that anywhere. So look at the joy of it. And so Mother says, if we want to be full of this sun of divine laughter, we should avoid something. Something we have to avoid. What is it we must avoid? And for that, let us avoid people who take life seriously. They are very boring people. Can you imagine? What a height she is speaking of, you know. Who come and give very philosophical lectures, and dry air it, super mind and over mind, and you won't understand. So she says, avoid people who take life very seriously. And hear how people have, you know, grown. If you look at the life of sadhaks, how they've been so joyous. Even people playing ringa ringa roses, they've grown like that. Children. And Sri Aurobindo's famous example, that one lady says, we want to do dance practice, but that sadhak is room is below and he meditates. And he says he'll be disturbed. What should we do? So Sri Aurobindo says, yeah, yeah, he's too serious to be danced over. So better you. So after some days, then Mother said, okay, you people can dance there. So they asked, but why? Sri Aurobindo initially said no. So Sri Aurobindo replied, now he has left his seriousness. Now you can dance over him. It was, that's how they brought up, and many of them. See, Amrit Das, such lovely stories. and mother is distributing rasgullas to all the Ashta Sakhis. Pavitrada comes and she is saying, you know what? See, I am going to play a little mischief. And I am telling you what his reaction will be. Basically, he would not want to eat rasgulla. You know, very like standards for everything, you know. So, see how his response will be. So, as soon as he comes, mother says, will you eat rasgulla? No, 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 mother, I am fine. And everybody laughing. He doesn't know why they are laughing, because she's already said that this is how it is going to be. On the other hand, we see Nishikanto, what kind of, even in pain, when he is paralyzed, mother asks, do you want anything, Nishikanto? Mother, put your feet here, that's all. And he recovered, lived on for another 12 years. And with his high diabetes, he would go with rasgullas to lake. Of course, this is not to be practiced unless you have the consciousness of Nishikant. And when mother asked him, people are complaining that you are taking, and he used to get vision of poetry. And he would write. So you were, Nishikant, what is it? You are carrying rasgulla, people told, and you are eating the full handi sitting at lake. Is it true? Yes, mother. Don't you know it is not good for you? Mother, I am Mahakali's child. You want me to be afraid? Okay, go. But if you are in that consciousness, not otherwise. So, as soon as the atmosphere becomes grave, you can be sure that something is wrong. It's so true. Even in ordinary life, you can feel that grave atmosphere. That there is a troubling influence, an old habit trying to reassert itself, which should not be accepted. All this regret, all this remorse, the feeling of being unworthy, of being at fault, and then one step further and you have the sense of sin. Oh, to me it all seems to belong to another age, an age of darkness. So, that's how it is. And he says, even the people who profess to follow a spiritual life, and they would tell her, how can you make such little things, such insignificant things, the object of spiritual experience? And yet, this is an experience that becomes more and more concrete and real, even materially. It's not that there are some things where the Lord is and some things where he is not. The Lord is always there. He takes nothing seriously. Everything amuses him and he plays with you. If you know how to play, you do not know how to play. People do not know how to play. But how well he knows how to play. How well he plays with everything, with the smallest things. You have some things to put on the table. Don't feel that you have to think and arrange. No, let's play. Let's put this one here and that one there. And this one like that, and then another one, it's different again. What a good game and such fun. So it's agreed, we shall try to learn how to laugh with the Lord. This putting things on the table, that Ganpati who was there with mother on the side table. And then somebody gave her a murti of Badri Narayan, so little bigger. So she says, now, you know, I have to reconcile them. Well, he's a great god. I put Ganpati on a handkerchief, so he's going to feel bad. So she takes in the hand and explains, see, don't feel bad, both of you are my children. How she would, you know, narrate. And okay, so then, of course, she talks about miracles and something. We'll go to two more very interesting things. Okay, this one is, often we hear people speak about ultimate goal of life, which is Nirvana, 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 Moksha, Moksha, Moksha. And any sensible person will raise this question. Why all this halabulu if the end is Moksha? Who put me in here? And for what purpose? Why first the heart gets entangled in attachments? Then you say you have to get rid of attachment. What is this play? And whatever way we may say, it is justified only if all this has a great ending. But if it is an abrupt ending in nirvana, moksha, where you vanish, there is not even a sense of I, then it doesn't make sense to anybody who can even slightly think and try to understand. So, but that's how we have, and from there comes the order of sannyasis. We often hear, he took sannyas diksha. To me, at least personally, I always felt that is the weakest point in somebody's life. Because if to find God you had to leave the world, that's a sign that you're not strong enough. You should be able to find him anywhere and everywhere, in everything. So the aphorism goes, Vivekananda, exalting sannyas, has said that in all Indian history there is only one Janak. Not so, for Janak is not the name of a single individual, but a dynasty of self-ruling kings and the triumph cry of an ideal. Janak was a lineage. One Janak whose guru was Ashtavakra, another was Yajnavalk, Mata Sita's father Janak, he and his brother. So there is a name. Janak is like a surname. And all of them were Videh. They lived in the world, they ruled kingdoms, but they were inwardly free, Jivan Mukta. They established an ideal. That's why they are so great lineage of kings where Mata Sita is born. So of being in the world but untouched and unaffected. So there have been hundreds of perfect sannyasins because sannyasa has been widely preached and numerously practiced. Let it be the same with the ideal freedom and we shall have hundreds of janaks. This is the future of mankind. Sannyas has a formal garb and outer tokens. Therefore, men think they can easily recognize it. That's one of the problems when they come to at least this ashram. They were looking for some sadhaks. Looking for some sadhak means they're looking for a particular person, head shaven, if not head shaven, at least one color of dress and walking with very, you know, eyes like that, low down and talking only Sanskrit. They have this idea. But that's not the ideal that Sri Krishna preached. That's not the ideal that Sri Aurobindo preached. So sannyas people believe they can recognize because of the dress. But the freedom of a janak does not proclaim itself. And it wears the garb of the world to its presence. Even Narad was blinded. We know that story where Narad is sent by his guru to get the jnana from janak. He says, what jnana I am missing? So he goes there. So you see janak is sitting in on his throne. Nice music is going on. Dance is going on. And there is fragrance and somebody is taking care of his feet and one. So he says, ye kya sikhne ke liye? What is there? I have left all this. I have renounced all this. What will I learn? Still because his guru has told him, so he goes there and says, I have been sent to you. He says, I know. Day crest tonight. Tomorrow you see Mithila. After that we'll talk what you want to know. He thinks, anyways, I'll see Mithila and go back. There's nothing that I need to know. So next day, king says, okay, you go see Mithila. It's all right. I'll see. I'll see Mithila. He said, but see one thing. Carry a pot over your head. Hold it carefully. It'll be full with water to the brim. Just make sure that even a drop doesn't come out of it. Now Narad goes through the city, comes back, he says, what did you see? He says, my whole thing was on the pot. That's how Sri Ramakrishna also describes in one of the stories where he says, women, Indian women, how they are carrying the pot on the head and one in the arm, baby, and they are talking to each other, but all the time their attention is on the baby, slightest cry, they can hear, they can understand. So there is another ideal which we have unfortunately, and that is the cause of India's downfall. That's what we lost track. We left the yoga of Sri Krishna And we entered into, Shankaracharya, not one person, but the lineage of that kind where moksha and sannyas started being preached. And even today, on all the forums, you see sannyasi ji coming and, they don't know really the deeper truth of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma is the image Shri Krishna sitting on the chariot in the battlefield, advising Arjun, Trigunatit bhav sabhisachi, fight, conquer nobly or perish highly, not like a weak, cowardly person and running away from challenges of life. Hard is it to be in the world free, yet living the life of ordinary men. There have been some ideas like that. But because it is hard, therefore it must be attempted and accomplished. So, this is the ideal that he has placed before us. And this is how the ashram also is organized. If you look at the ashram closely, Shubhinda says, I have to give the name ashram for want of better name. Because it comes from the root shram. It is a labor, but a labor of another kind. What's going on in the ashram? Inside that only the sadhaks know. But otherwise, outwardly there is no marker and all activities are represented here. There is school, there is art, there is music, there is painting, there is poetry, there is school, there is science, there is literature. Every possible activity, swimming, sports, so much of, And all boys and girls take part and it's just unimaginable. Every activity, marbling, creativity, shooting, television, mother even wanted a place to come up which will have like a studio, filming studio. Auroville also, you see, it's a very different kind of a world. But it's difficult, more challenging than to simply have a bhojan bhandar and langar and meditation hall. That's easy. And sometimes it can be very deceptive because, you harbor things inside. It doesn't come out. You crush them. But here it's to refine, to purify, to grow with all the challenges. So she says, to be free from all attachment does not mean running away from all occasion for attachment. All these people who assert their asceticism not only run away but warn others not to try. And then she says, this seems so obvious to me. When you need to run away from a thing in order not to experience it, it means that you are not above it. You are still on the same level. There are also so many stories of that kind. Because you are afraid that this may happen, that may happen. Anything that suppresses, diminishes or lessens cannot bring freedom. Freedom has to be experienced in the whole of life and in all sensations. Savitri, this is a very powerful line. When death says, you are choosing Satyavan after all this great wisdom that you are speaking of. Are you really free? He says, what else is freedom if you cannot be free even in bonds? Ultimate definition of freedom. You don't have to be outwardly free to be free. You are free within. So, and then she says that the route that people adopt, for fear of being mistaken in our actions, we stop doing anything at all. For fear of being mistaken in our speech, we stop speaking. For fear of eating, for the pleasure of eating, we do not eat at all. This is not freedom. It is simply reducing the manifestation to a minimum. And the natural conclusion is nirvana. Because if you have to do this, why are you doing it step by step? If you have to do halal, halal is not a good word. Huh? Halal is slow. Do it jhatka, finished. Why you have to do it slowly? If you have decided really nirvana and mukti are the goal, then you are continuing and doing all these superfluous. Do it in one go. If you are really sincere, then do it. You have a difficulty, but anyways, slowly, 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 you will have the pain, probably all the attachment, all this. He says, that's not the path. So, because then you will reduce all manifestation. Manifestation, all the different ways in which divine is expressing himself. And then she says something very beautiful. But if the Lord wanted only nirvana, nothing but nirvana would exist. There would be no creation. It is obvious that he conceives of the coexistence of all opposites, and that for him this must be the beginning of a totality. Opposites are because they challenge us. That's why with every man or a woman, there is a problematic character, you know, gender changes, a challenge. So husband, if they can adjust to each other, means they can adjust to the whole world. It's not about adjusting, it's about understanding and growing. Actually, it's known in psychology. Now, if you still, if you have a very harmonious thing, then there will be a child who will be difficult. It's a challenge thrown at you. That, okay. You both, okay, I am the challenge. So, Krishna is born in every family. So, basically, it is that you know, we try to run away from challenges, difficulties, conflicts. Whereas to find the higher resolution. For everybody and everything, it will be different. But this is the whole thing, that he puts opposites. There is a reason. There is a line in Savitri. But our life is a paradox with God for key. You can't solve. That's why husband-wife problem can never be solved unless you bring in God. Not that way that he is God. That dangerous. Or she is God. But all is God. And God is the center. That is the way you can harmonize. That's why I often say at least aspiration same hona chahiye, baki theek hai. Because then at least you have at the core something very important. Natures cannot always, you know, you no way it will tally. And that's a challenge. But you know, when you look at it, like how do people understand each other here? Yeah, this often I give this example. You may have whatever fights, quarrels or difficulties. At the end of the day, you say, maa ka bachcha, mother's child doing mother's work. So you say, we are all in the same, you know, not soup, but we are all building the bridge of, you know, engaged in the bridge building. So we can't have Nal, Neel and all the other vanar. They must be having their own difficulties, no? But if they fight, immediately they remember, arre, Ramji ka kaam karna hai. So this is how we have to look at life. And then, you know, if the core is there, then easy to harmonize. But even if it's not there, you can look at it from a higher standpoint. That, well, I have to grow through this and the divine knows best. So obviously, if one feels meant for that, one can choose only one of his manifestations, that is to say the absence of manifestation, which is if one feels like going for nirvana. But it is still a limitation. And this is not the only way to find him. Far from it. And she says why this is originated. It is a very common tendency which probably originates from an ancient suggestion or perhaps from some lack, some incapacity. Reduce, reduce, reduce one's needs, reduce one's activities, reduce one's words, reduce one's food, reduce one's active life. And all that becomes so narrow in one's aspiration not to make any more mistakes, one eliminates any occasion for making them. It is not a cure. You are afraid of life. But the other way is much, much more difficult. So it depends on what you choose. The other is more difficult, more complete. And ultimately, that's the way, because you have to manifest the divine in everything. Everything, everything is everything. But the old suggestion is, no, this is risky, that is. So you start reducing, that's the ideal. And in India, it is so important now to get back to that other original yoga of Sri Krishna and Sri Aurobindo. Otherwise, we go back to the same way. So what is the solution? Now she gives a solution. Means what? What do I do? No, the solution is to act only under the divine impulsion. This is difficult. Because I am neither acting according to my mental conception, right, wrong, my advantage, disadvantage, nor am I taking the standpoint of instinct and impulse. So how do I act? Stay quiet. Wait for the divine impulsion. To eat only under the divine impulsion. That is the difficult thing, because normally you immediately confuse the divine impulsion with your personal impulses. Because you easily start saying, mother wants this in me, mother is telling me, mother is telling, mother will also be wondering, my child, what have I told you? There were people like that who jumped into a well. He said, I heard Sri Aurobindo's voice that jumped, so I jumped. He said, have you surrendered your basic common sense? So, but at least honesty is that, well, this is how my life is taking shape. I offer it to the mother, keep her constantly, invoke her, keep in contact with her, so that she will take me through everything and bring me to her. And then, of course, it speaks about apostles of but she says, I do not know why, but it always seemed to me like showing off, wearing the rope. She says, some people wear a rope to tell you, stay off, you know, keep a distance. I'm a sannyasi. She says, to that extent, to an extent, it safeguards you. Because not nowadays people go near sannyasis, everybody. But otherwise it was like, look here, don't get near to me. So it was like, you have to publicly proclaim. So people expect certain things from you. But then she says, I do not know why, but it always seemed to me like showing off. It may not be, and in some cases it is not, but all the same, it is a way of saying to people, look, this is what I am. And as I say, it may help, but it has its drawbacks. It is another childishness. All these things are means, stages, steps. True freedom is to be free of everything, including means, methods, sitting in meditation. Even that, all the methods. Because if you perceive the divine everywhere in everything, live with that consciousness day and night, one day you will begin to perceive the presence. That's a meditation if you like. You're not sitting and closing your eyes and suddenly getting up and say, I have a revelation. Because then everything becomes a revelation, even the smallest thing. That's what she's saying. Even the running of the tap water becomes a revelation, because you are so beautifully open to that presence. It is a restriction, a constriction, whereas the true thing is an opening, a widening, an identification with the whole. When you reduce yourself. You do not have any feeling of losing yourself. It takes away your fear of losing yourself. You become something solid and compact. That's why people are afraid even of love, because love is something which is so threatening. You may lose yourself, and therefore people are afraid. But if you choose the method of widening, the greatest possible widening, you must not be afraid of losing yourself. It is much more difficult. And then she says, that's why people have monasteries and all that. And one thing she says about ashram. So the disciple asks, but how can one find a way to be what one should be in normal conditions? How can one avoid falling into one kind of excess or the other? To live normally and to be free. This is what disciple asks. Mother says, my child, that is why the ashram was created. A very normal, regular guys, okay? But, and that but is, in these conditions, through all this, carrying everything together with this wonderful laughter of the divine, move towards the goal. How can, because in France, I was always asking myself, how can one find the time to find oneself? How can one even find the time to understand how to become free? So then I thought, a place where material needs will be sufficiently provided for, so that if one truly wants to become free, one can do so. And the ashram was founded on this idea, not on any other. A place where people would have enough to live on so as to have time to think of the true thing. And then she says, human nature is such that laziness has taken the place of aspiration. Not for everyone, but anyway in quite a general way. And license or libertinism has taken the place of freedom, which would tend to prove that the human race has to pass through a period of rough handling before it is ready to pull itself away more sincerely from its slavery to activity. But she would not advocate sannyas. She would say, take the challenge, go through it. How many will go through it? They would be the genuine ones. And that's why when Shubhendu was asked, why do you give so much freedom to your disciples? He said, because Superman cannot be created otherwise. You can't restrict, limit, cut, reduce, and then expect, you know, you have to allow the freedom. It's a challenge. You can call it a difficulty. You can call it a danger. But whoever climbed Mount Everest without taking the danger? And whoever got the delight of climbing the summits without undertaking the great journey? Otherwise you have those cinema scopes where you see Mount Everest and feel happy, I had a glimpse. But to live that in everyday life is the real challenge. That's what the ashram is meant for. Jema.